This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 249. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
The aftermath of Rotworld and Damien's death, plus industry news. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, March 17, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. Or you can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter at sfppn. Or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9737. SFP.
Now, Mark.
Yes.
I'm making you go back a little bit in this episode because I wanted to talk about the conclusions to the Animal Man and Swamp Thing issues.
Right.
And I have a whole bunch of comics left to read. So I just want to let everybody know that Pick of the Week on our website is not updated because I'm so far behind.
Okay.
Okay.
But speaking of the first topic, Animal Man number 18 and Swamp Thing number 18 by Lemire and Pugh and Snyder and Paquette. So this is, again, the aftermath of the whole Rotworld crossover. Both of them have been sent back by the Parliament of Decay to stop Arcane from taking over and basically allowing Rotworld to occur.
Now, how did you feel about them making the Parliament of Decay actually not a bad force, but just one of the balanced three forces?
Well, I think that's the point. It's one of the balanced three forces. None of the forces really want to take over. They want to, things to be in balance.
It's
that's
just
their
if
job.
They get a bad avatar.
Right.
So you like that idea?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
Buddy returns to find his family being taken over or being attacked by the Rot. And Maxine has to step in, and we finally see her exert her full power as the next avatar of the Red. And she kind of pulls the humans out of these creatures.
And everybody was surprised by that because
they were
weren't supposed to be humans inside.
Right.
And so I'm curious as to what these guys in what looked to be space suit-y type thing.
Yeah, it looked like some sort, they were talking about some sort of experiment and something went wrong.
So I'm really curious as to who these people are.
So that's setting up some future plot line, hopefully.
Now, remind me, is Lemire going to be on Animal Man or is he leaving Animal Man?
As far as I know, they're both leaving their titles.
Okay, that's what I thought.
After the battle's over, essentially, William Arcane takes a last shot at Cliff and kills him. And so Buddy manages to lose his son anyways. In both of these stories, there is this major sacrifice that the hero makes. In this case, it was, I wouldn't say accidental, but Buddy didn't know that that was going to happen.
I'm kind of sad that I'm not going to see where Jeff Lemire would go with this. I hope that it continues in the same vein and doesn't go off in an entirely different direction or tone.
Right. You have to hope that the new creatives come in and just continue that and don't say, oh, no, I have my completely different ideas for the story, for the these characters.
Right.
Meanwhile, over in Swamp Thing, Alec returns to find Arcane attacking Abby, which is how this whole thing started. And after a quick fight, Abby tells Alec that to stop Arcane, she has to be killed. That way there's no vessel for him to transfer to, essentially.
Well, and that makes her suitable to be the avatar in his place.
Right. The avatar of the Rot.
Right.
And it pretty much takes all Alec has in order to do the deed to kill her. But he does so. And then Abby does return as avatar of the Rot and then destroys Arcane. And Alec and Abby spend a final moment together while their old bodies are subsumed by the green. It's all very symbolic.
It is. And I also am sort of looking forward to how they deal with this. I mean, it's going to always be, I think, now there is no more Alec Holland because he's also dead. It's only Swamp Thing.
Right.
So how is this going to be now with them still having this affection and love for each other?
But now they're opposing forces.
And not really able to get together at all.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I hope.
And as far as I know, this is how their runs end.
Right.
I believe both of them are moving on as of this issue. So, again, we'll see how the next creatives handle this, whether they will take these storylines forward. I have to believe they will, because these were very successful. And I can't believe that they would bring in new talent and go, okay, well, we're wiping the slate clean and going somewhere else.
But even not just wiping the slate clean, but keeping the same tone where it's a little bit dark, but not... I just love the way it was, and mm-hmm. I hope it stays.
Yeah. Batman number 18 and Batman and Robin number 18 by Snyder and Kubert and Tomasi and Gleason. So this is the aftermath of Damian's death. Now, all of the Bat titles are going to have this Requiem issue where they're going to deal with Damian's death. So in the Batman issue, if you remember many issues ago, there was this storyline about a brother and sister. She ends up saving Bruce after she finds these jamming devices that he was using. And there's this big battle with Killer Croc in...
But she actually saves Batman, doesn't she?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because I think that's an important distinction.
That's true.
Right here.
Saves Batman.
Yes.
So she's now kind of doing the vigilante bit, but she's basically just shadowing Bruce and sees that he's gone on a rampage, even for him. So she knows something's wrong and he's in pain about something. But of course, she has no idea what has happened. And she finally reveals herself to him and again, saving him, because he gets in this fight with a guy with these genetically altered dogs with venom in them and... apparently in these dog fights, and so she manages to save him. Bruce is just screaming at her, saying, well, do you just expect to be the new sidekick? Because, again, she doesn't know what she's getting into here. And what,
what struck me, though, was why didn't she know that there was something wrong? Why hasn't she noticed that Robin's not been around?
They're vigilantes, so I don't know how public it is at this point that Robin's dead.
But wouldn't you notice that he wasn't around if you've been stalking Batman this much?
Presumably, but there's also times when Batman goes off on his own anyway.
I suppose.
So she says, no, I don't want that, because she knows she's not ready to do that. But she tells him he needs to deal with whatever his issue is, because otherwise he's putting himself in real danger of being killed. He's taking way too many chances. And then she goes to Bruce in his civilian ID, goes to the Wayne Tower, and warns him about Batman. Because remember, Bruce is still technically funding Batman.
Right.
Although they really haven't talked about that a lot since the reboot. But since this Batman Incorporated storyline is still running, you have to assume, yeah, everybody knows, at least publicly, Bruce is funding Batman. Batman meets with her later and basically thanks her for trying to help him out. He admits that he's going through a very rough time. I really did like that story, and it then begs the question, is she the new Robin?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Now, we do know that in the Batman and Robin title for the next several issues, there's going to be a guest star in terms of the partner, like for the next 5 issues, I believe. So Nightwing's going to guest and Batgirl's going to guest and, you know, basically all the other members of the Bat family are going to step in for an issue.
Yeah, I would assume that at least all the former Robins would be Robin for an issue.
So the Batman and Robin story has no dialogue or narration, which I thought was a really nice way to go. Bruce is obviously trying to deal with Damian's death, and we see all of these events occur. Again, no dialogue, no narration, just the pictures. There's this list of movies that Clark left for Damian. I thought that was a nice touch at the beginning because it's
yes.
A reference to CK. There's the unfinished family portrait that Alfred is staring at and crying, and Bruce just comes in and covers it up.
Which raises the question, How do they explain that Damien is missing?
That's going to be a good question, how that is explained, because publicly everybody knows that Damien is Bruce's son.
So I guess they could say, oh, he went back to live with his mother.
Yeah, or something to that effect. There's a nice reference to going down the bat poles, which I haven't seen a reference in the comic books to going down the bat poles for years. And of course, this is all a call back to the Adam West series.
Yes, I thought that was very nice.
There's the prerequisite glass case with Damien's costume now in it. All the now dead Robins throughout the years, or the ones who have moved on, all have their costumes there. Batman swinging around Gotham, and at one point he sees his reflection in a skyscraper window, and he flashes back to him and Robin. There's, at one point, this huge pile of bad guys left at the bat signal. Just like 40 or 50 bad guys that have all been beaten up and thrown there by Batman. And this is, again, calling back to he's just gone on this rampage.
I thought that was really nice. It sort of tied it in with the other Batman title.
Right. Yeah, this is all going on at the same time.
Because, you know, sometimes you don't get the feeling that these things are going on at the same time.
This is much more coherent. And then at the end, he finds this letter from Damien just before the final battle, where Damien explains why he has to step in, even though Bruce told him not to. So I thought it was a very impressive issue. And as I mentioned, the rest of the Bat titles will have their own Requiem issue. There's already been a Batgirl issue.
Well, and I want to point out that I really liked the
World's Finest.
World's Finest. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really a Requiem issue.
No.
But it had a nice little touch with Huntress saying goodbye to her not brother.
Right.
I liked that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to some industry news. A few things have gone on the last couple weeks. First off is that JLA number one is the biggest book since 1996 at 307,000 copies. Quite a lot of that was thanks to the 50 variants for all the state flags. It outranks any DC title in what's referred to as the Diamond Exclusive Era. And what that means is, back in the late 80s, early 90s, well, actually in the 90s, there was this battle between the distributors. There used to be more than one distributor of comic books.
Wah?
And they fought it out, and there was a period in which the various publishers said, okay, I'll be exclusive to one versus exclusive to the other, and it ended up that Diamond got more exclusives and killed their competition, and that's why now Diamond is the only distributor, and that's why they refer to as the Diamond Exclusive Era. And it outranks, as I mentioned, any other title during that era, including the infamous Superman The Wedding Album. Now, if you go to almost any comic book shop, somewhere in that shop, probably in the back corner somewhere, you will find a huge pile of white embossed copies of Superman The Wedding Album. This was way overpurchased. It did not sell very well at all.
So it is worth nothing now.
Yeah, and it is actually, you know, is that what's going to happen to this JLA number one? We'll see. I don't think as much because there are those 50 variants, and that had a lot to do with how well that sold.
Do you suppose they did, like, less copies of the Alaska variant than, say, the New York variant?
I have to assume.
And then that would make the Alaska one more?
Presumably. I'm sure they didn't do equal number of copies because they knew how many pre-sales they had for the polls. All right, so the January 2013 DC numbers are in. DC's average sales, so overall, in terms of the issues, was 33,000 copies per comic. And there were 8 non-canceled titles that were under 20,000. There were a lot that are being canceled, but even the ones that weren't canceled, there are 8 of them under 20,000 right now.
Now, I want to just jump in here for a minute. I was talking about comics and comic sales to a non-comic reading friend who reads books. So, you know, we do have that in common.
Right.
But we were talking about how many comics she thought, say, a Superman title would sell on an average month.
Mm-hmm.
And she really thought that Superman was selling 500,000 or 600,000 copies on a regular basis. And I think if you asked any people out on the street, they might believe that as well.
Oh, yeah.
To me, it is just phenomenal that they can stay in business selling an average of 33,000 copies per title.
Are there too many DC titles? Now, in DC Universe, so that includes what used to be called Johnny DC and anything that's anything over the entire DCU. So that doesn't include Vertigo, but everything else was 73 titles, which is enormous. It's one of the highest numbers they've ever seen in terms of titles. So there's definitely a need to cull the number of comics out there, and they're doing so.
Well, I think, didn't I read that they're not going to have 52 regular titles anymore?
As of June, they're going to be down to 50 of the 52. So I think that's a good idea. Doing 52 was a nice gimmick, but it certainly isn't worth that if you're going to keep out these titles that are just not selling well at all. So meanwhile, the Vertigo average sales, average in terms of what they sold for each comic, was at 10.7 thousand. The overall number, so all of every Vertigo comic issue sold, 64,000. Also a very low point for Vertigo, which makes sense because they have so few titles right now.
Right, but that is not counting how they're selling in graphic novels.
Right, just the floppies. So some of the actual numbers that came out, and this is, again, the numbers I'm referring to are the Diamond 300, so the top 300 titles overall. Number two, Batman at 145,000. Number three, Justice League, 117,000. Number eight, Detective at 92,000. Number 12, Batman and Robin, 81,000. 16, Green Lantern at 72,000. 17, Batgirl at 72,000. Number 20, Nightwing at 69,000. So as you can tell, in terms of the top 20, apart from Green Lantern and Justice League, everything else is a Bat title.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So clearly Batman has been and continues to be the number one hero at DC. Now, on the other end of the scale, the lowest non-canceled book right now is Batwing at 13,000. They were number 143.
I just don't understand the whole Batwing title anyway.
I think they must have some grand plan for the character, although they don't seem to use him all that often. Despite, you know, you don't see him in the other titles all that much, and yet they're just convinced they have to keep this title going. I don't know why. One other story is that Marvel at South by Southwest announced free digital comics. They were going to put out 700 number one Marvel issues. So 700 different comics from Marvel's history, all the number ones. You were able to get them for free, and this was going to be through Comixology, which promptly shut down Comixology. They couldn't handle it because you tell people there's free comics, and so many of them, is going to kill virtually any online service. Now, Comixology handles both DC and Marvel's and many other publishers through kind of like a private...
So they're like the diamond of digital comics.
They've become like the diamond of digital comics. And they were the first to market with the idea of digital sales and had a system that they could sell to the publishers. And in fact, we use their pull list service for the paper copies we get.
I like it.
Yeah, I do too. So the CEO apologized publicly for their problems. Question is, did Marvel actually warn them about this in advance, or did some marketing guy go, hey, I got a great idea, let's do this, and didn't think it through? We don't know. And the other question is, because of the screw-up, will Marvel decide to go do it on their own, just as they did in the 90s when they decided we could publish our own comic, we could distribute our own comics. Why should we have somebody else do it? Which ended up, ironically, making Diamond the exclusive company. It led to that event.
I wonder if Comixology, though, could do something like license their comics handling software to Marvel.
They
and
could.
And then Marvel could run their own little servers of Comixology.
They could. I'm sure they, I mean, from a technical standpoint, no reason they couldn't, but whether they want to do that, we'll see. Okay, before we get out of here, let's go to our fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm starting the timer.
TV related?
Yes.
It's a one show on the cover?
Yes.
Is it a show on one of the three major networks?
No.
Is it a show on pay cable?
Yes.
Another pay cable show. Okay, is it genre related?
Yes.
Is it zombie related?
No.
Is it vampire related?
No.
Is it science fiction related?
No.
No. Is it fantasy related?
Yes.
Is it Game of Thrones?
It is.
Game of Thrones? Didn't they just have a cover?
Well, you guessed Game of Thrones last week, but it wasn't Game of Thrones. So this week it is.
Okay.
I won't make you guess who's on the cover.
Yeah.
Sometime we'll have to watch Game of Thrones.
I suppose. All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek DS9 reviews. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.